Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Legally Speaking with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam, and Pearson. Nice to see you as ever.
Very nice to see you as well.
You showed up without a jacket on. I thought, aren't you brave? But apparently you've taken your rain slicker off.
That's exactly it. It's starting to come down out there, so we've got a one wet jacket and umbrella cooling in the other room.
Okay, well done. The steam coming off of him. No, it's not quite that bad yet. But this morning we're going to hone in on judges. This will be some fun.
Yes.
Judges, people think, well, whose auspices do they come under? Who takes care of the judges or monitors what they do?
And it's come to the attention now as a result of a complaint that was filed just the other week with respect to a former Alberta provincial court judge by the name of Robin Camp, who was currently a federal court judge. He was elevated by the previous federal government in 2015, which raises some interesting issues of its own. This fellow is currently before the Canadian Judicial Council, and that's an organization which is tasked with monitoring the behavior and conduct of judges. Now, for very good reason, we want judges to be independent. We don't want a circumstance where if a judge makes an unpopular decision, as they may be called upon to make, we don't want a circumstance where a person's subject to being fired for doing things that are unpopular. But on the other hand, there is a high standard expected of judges in terms of their conduct, both personal conduct and conduct on the bench. And this case involves a complaint about alleged disrespectful conduct by the judge. Now, I should say we have a mechanism in place which deals with judicial mistakes, right? Judges are human beings. They're going to make mistakes. And we're lucky to have a system that has a remedy for that, which is an appeal. In the case that I'm going to talk about in a few minutes about this judge, that remedy was carried out. This was the case that's now being dealt with for this judge. It was a sexual assault charge. The judge in that case made a number of what would appear to be legal errors in terms of things including the elements of consent, which would be a thing probably worth talking about on its own. But the judge also, and this is why it's more than just an appeal dealing with a mistake.
Right.
The judge in the transcript asked the complainant things including why she couldn't just keep her knees together, asked this complainant why you didn't just stick your bottom down into a basin so he couldn't penetrate you. Referred to her repeatedly as the accused and is alleged to have just treated her in a disrespectful fashion throughout the proceedings. As well, in the course of that, it appeared to demonstrate a misunderstanding of the legal elements of what is a sexual assault and what are the elements of consent and what is required.
Well, I mean, I'm not a judge, but judging the judge, I would say that that's way off the mark, not just from a legal perspective, but also from just a moral perspective, and you're saying that there is something that they're bound to, you know, their behavior and conduct, that would be a breach there as well, by my estimation.
Yes, and that's why there are these two processes. There's the ordinary appeal process. Now, the accused in that case was acquitted, that went to the Alberta Court of Appeal, and the Court of Appeal overturned the acquittal and has sent the matter back for a new trial. And the Court of Appeal indicated that it was persuaded that the judge may have engaged in sexual stereotyping, stereotypical myths, long discredited ideas, also made mistakes in terms of what the law is in terms of consent and what's required. So the case was dealt with that way. But the next issue is going to be whether the judge's conduct was inappropriate and then what should be done about that. Now, in terms of the legal mistake, and that's worth touching upon for people, consent in the sexual assault context, the Crown would need to prove that the accused did not believe that the person was consenting to the sexual activity. It is clear that an accused person is required to show that they took reasonable steps in the circumstances to ascertain that the complainant was consenting. And the Supreme Court of Canada has made clear that a belief based on silence or somebody being passive or ambiguous conduct does not constitute a defense. So in other words, a person can't, an accused person can't say, look, she didn't fight me off or didn't say no. That's not the state of the law. A person needs to obtain actual consent, something affirmative. It's not enough to say, well, the person failed to fight me off.
Yeah.
That doesn't do it. And that, in part, is why sort of asking somebody questions like, you know, why couldn't you just keep your knees together, in addition to being offensive, it also demonstrates a misunderstanding of what's required. The Crown need not show that, you know, the accused, if they're saying, look, they believed consent was there, it's not enough to say the person didn't struggle or fight or that they didn't complain loudly enough.
I find this an appalling lapse.
Well, I think
Do we use the term lapse?
Well, then that's the thing. This appeared to be something which went on throughout the course of the trial. It wasn't an isolated remark or comment, at least the complaint. And the complaint's based on a transcript of what the judge said. So court proceedings are all recorded. There really is no ambiguity about what the judge said. Right. He said these things. So that brings us to what this counsel does. Now, removing a judge is not an easy thing, and it shouldn't be an easy thing, and that's not a benefit for the judge. That's a benefit for all of us. We don't want a circumstance where if you go to court, the judge is worried about, well, I might lose my job if I do an unpopular thing.
Fair enough. There are
lots of accused in criminal cases who would be very unpopular, and it may be difficult. If somebody's acquitted, members of the public might be angry about that. But you don't want a circumstance where a judge was going to be fired or disciplined for doing an unpopular thing. But on
this goes beyond being unpopular.
I agree. This isn't, and it's important here, the legal issue about whether this person's guilty or not, that's dealt with. It's being sent back for a new trial. But this Canadian Judicial Council, this council deals with federally appointed judges. So judges in the BC Supreme Court, Court of Appeal, federal courts, Supreme Court of Canada, I guess, theoretically. And the council's made up includes the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Canada, Beverly McLaughlin, and the Chief Justices from each of the provinces. And I think there's some other members as well. But it's a panel of judges. And they can review complaints. They have the power to conduct a public inquiry into the conduct of a judge, which they've done before. And then they have the power to recommend, in appropriate cases, the removal of a judge. But to remove a Superior Court judge, federally appointed judge, you need to have a joint resolution of the Senate and House of Commons. So it's not an easy task.
Wow.
As far as I'm aware, that's never actually occurred. Although this council has in the past recommended the removal of judges, and in the two cases that I found where they'd done that, the judge simply resigned. They saw the writing on the wall. I guess no one wants to be the first person to go down in history as the first judge that was removed. Right. So when this panel recommends removal, that's what's happened. That's right. It's important what that council is, right? It's a council of other judges, so we don't want a circumstance where there's political influence. The case also raises the other interesting element of it is this case in which the judge made these remarks. This was in 2014.
Let's hold your thought right there. We're going to take a quick break. We'll keep people on the edge of their seats here. And Legally Speaking with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam, and Pearson. Stay with us.
Call us. 250-386-1161 or on your cell at Star 1070. Pamela McCall on CFAX 1070. When it rains, it pours. Or will it? We get it right with an accurate up-to-the-minute forecast. If it's happening, it's here. Victoria's News Authority, CFAX 1070.
At Simon G. Jewelry, we believe that a truly great piece of jewelry is the one that gets worn the most and one you and your loved ones will treasure for generations. For more than 30 years, that idea drives every piece we design, from working with metals whose colors will never change to the cut of every stone we set. No detail is too small. Come celebrate the best of life at
Palmera Jewelers at the corner of Ford and Broad and PalmeraJewelers.com.
I'm in!
We're in! We are Vice Nation!
This weekend, your UVic Vice
Pikes teams hit the hardwood at the Carsa Performance Gym against Saskatchewan. And tomorrow night, one student will win a year's parking on campus, courtesy of Campus Auto Group. Get your tickets and catch all your Vikes basketball online at GoVikesGo.com.
Vikes Nation, are you in?
Thinking about winter driving makes you want to ignore this. Since driving on icy roads requires lots of this.
Attention!
But if you take advantage of Mitsubishi's Yokohama Winter Tire Package, you'll actually want to do this. Even when it's doing this. Because your tires will grip like this. That was Velcro. Get to know Mitsubishi with a no-charge winter tire package worth up to $1,400, including tires, wheels, installation, mounting, and balancing. You'll be ready for whatever winter throws at you. Mitsubishi. Built better, backed better. On the purchase of select vehicles. Offer ends soon. For details, visit MitsubishiMotors.ca.
Are you a shopping addict?
A hamburger connoisseur?
Golf aficionado?
If you answered yes or just love screaming hot deals and discounts at your favorite hangouts, you gotta download the Get in the Loop app on your smartphone. The Get in the Loop app will also get you deals on golfing, spa visits, shopping, and more. It's easy. No coupon printing or pre-purchasing required. And brand new to Get in the Loop is deals on vision care. Spend less while experiencing more with CFAX 1070 and the Get in the Loop app, available on the App Store. You'll love it.
How Bell makes getting a smartphone better.
Alex wanted a better mobile carrier, and she switched to Bell. She loved everything they had to offer. An amazing selection of smartphones starting at $0, totally affordable rate plans, and access to Canada's largest LTE network. And since 99% of customers choose to stay with Bell on a monthly basis, shouldn't you switch too?
Hurry into a Bell store today. Bell, switching just got better.
With Figaro, you get more than just a shave and a haircut. Rossini's witty romp, The Barber of Seville, is coming to Victoria. Join Pacific Opera as it presents The Barber of Seville at the Royal Theatre, a tuneful and vivacious classic filled with humor and fun. Five performances only between February 11th and 21st. For tickets and more info, visit pov.bc.ca or call 250-385-0222.
Where the conversation gets steeped. Cafe Victoria Saturday with Bruce Williams at 3 on CFAX 1070. Now, Pamela McCall. Call 250-386-1161. BC-wide, call toll-free 1-855-686-1161.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Legally Speaking with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam, and Pearson. We're talking about judges. Some very disturbing activities on their part. Take it away, Michael.
Well, the other interesting thing this case raises is the issue of sort of how this judge wound up where he currently is. The case in which the remarks that I mentioned earlier were made occurred when Judge Camp was a provincial court judge, a lower-level judge in Alberta in 2014. In June of 2015, he was promoted. By Peter McKay announced it. He was promoted to the federal court trial division. And that decision raises some interesting issues about whether and sort of what degree of vetting was done when that occurred and the appropriateness of granting a promotion to somebody with that background.
So what was on his record before his promotion? What would there have been a red flag or some sort of... What happened to him after he said this, after he said these awful things and clearly was out of order when it comes to law?
Well, the original appeal would have been filed prior to the his appointment or promotion.
So the case at all went to appeal?
It had gone to appeal, but there hadn't yet been a decision from the Court of Appeal. That only happened after that. So I guess it's a matter of sort of what degree of vetting was done prior to making that decision. And for the appointment of federal judges, there is a process of sort of committee vetting of people to make sure they're somebody with appropriate background and so on to do that work. But there is an abbreviated process when an existing judge, like of a provincial court, is applying for a position on a different court where there isn't the same degree of inquiry into that person's character. Now, one of the other things that it raises, at least in my mind, is the appropriateness of those sort of judicial promotions, if you want to call it that. One of our goals is to ensure judicial independence. That's why there isn't an easy process to remove judges because of decisions we might dislike. We want them to feel independent and make decisions based on the case and not be worried about public opinion. But the flip side of that, and sort of one of the issues, is whether it's appropriate that an existing judge be promoted. Because you also wouldn't want a circumstance where a judge would be concerned that their decisions might be vetted in some way to determine whether they should receive a promotion. Now, that does happen regularly, but that is a worry. While you don't want judges to be fearful that they're going to be punished or fired or something,
they have to have some mechanism to rein them in.
Well, the flip side is you don't want a system where they would be potentially incentivized to make decisions that might be popular with
right.
the government.
So in order to get promotions.
If you're a provincial court judge wanting to be on the federal court, for example.
That just sounds criminal to me.
You would want to be careful that somebody didn't think, well, gee whiz, I wouldn't want to make a decision that the federal government would dislike because that's going to hurt my chances to get that job.
Curry favor, yeah.
So there's a reasonable argument to be made that we should not, or with only great reluctance, be in the regular business of promoting people. But I suppose, on the other hand, there are benefits to having for example, a Court of Appeal judge or a Supreme Court of Canada judge who has experience as a trial judge, because they are then tasked with reviewing decisions of trial judges. So to some extent, you say, well, gee, it's pretty helpful if we have somebody who's done that work before. So when they're being asked to look at cases, they would have some experience.
Even though
it.
Their conduct has been
I'm not saying this particular judge. I'm just saying in general terms.
Right.
With this one, the question's got to be what degree of screening went on when the decision was made in June of 2015 to promote this judge from the provincial court to the federal court.
Did he not face any disciplinary action for what he said? We don't need to repeat it,
yeah.
but for...
Well, not yet. The complaint has now been filed. It was a complaint filed by several law professors who reviewed the transcript of the remarks that the judge made during the trial, reviewed the decision from the Alberta Court of Appeal overturning the acquittal, and then it was law professors from Calgary and... Dalhousie, four of them who sent this complaint only recently, November the 9th, that just went to the Canadian Judicial Council, who are now tasked with reviewing what happened, reviewing the transcript, and deciding whether to conduct a public inquiry, and then whether they're going to recommend removal or training or remedial work, whatever might be appropriate.
So without their intervention, this wouldn't have happened.
That's right. They would work on the complaint. I mean, the appeal process went along, and that resolved the particular outcome in that case.
But it didn't deal with the judge.
But it doesn't deal with the judge. And they are separate things, right? You can certainly appreciate, you could have a judge who just made a mistake, right? I mean, this particular judge...
It turns my stomach.
Well, no, see, the notice of his appointment says he was previously engaged in commercial litigation. That's what he did prior to being appointed as a judge in 2012. So, I mean, it may well be, and his training was from South Africa. That's where he went to law school. He requalified in Canada in 1998, but he went to school in South Africa in 1975. So it may be that the judge, and it would appear that he did, just not understand the Canadian law in terms of consent.
Then how did he requalify? How did he get through?
Well, he qualified to practice law here, but he practiced commercial litigation. So then he was appointed as a provincial court judge in Alberta.
Gotcha.
He's hearing a criminal case, and he appeared to not know what the law was in terms of consent, and he appeared not to know about the restrictions on cross-examining a complainant in a sexual assault case about previous sexual activity.
How does he get into that position if he's a litigation lawyer? How does he ascend to a position of being a criminal judge?
Well, their judges aren't specified as to sort of what area they would sit in, although it happens to be that in provincial court, the majority of the work that's done is criminal work. Most criminal cases are dealt with in provincial court. So that's just what he was sitting on. He seemed to not understand as well, and not only not understand it, but he expressed during the case his disagreement with the law as it stands in terms of restricting the use of a person's previous sexual activity. It's prohibited in a sexual assault case to lead evidence about a complainant's previous sexual history in order to suggest that the person is more likely to have consented or that they are less worthy of belief. The judge didn't seem to like that state of the law, and moreover, he didn't seem to apply it here.
So remind us where he is now.
Well, now he's sitting on the Federal Court Trial Division, and that's a court which would deal with appeals and other issues arising from decisions of the federal government. So things like appeal issues or suing the federal government. And these sort of things might arise in that context, these sort of issues and things like, you can imagine, immigration cases. So let's say somebody was a refugee. If somebody was saying, look, I was subject to, sexual abuse or something in another country, and that's why they're fleeing. You can imagine that a judge in that his current position, while he wouldn't be hearing criminal cases, might well hear cases that would involve issues related to this. And it's important that the Judicial Council do what it's doing and review the conduct, not so much to sort out whether he made a mistake. It's clear that he did, and the Court of Appeals dealt with that. But their task, the Judicial Council's task, is to look at this judge's conduct to determine whether it was sort of inappropriate, unprofessional, and disrespectful.
Who can complain to the Judicial Council? Anybody, or do they have to be law profs?
They certainly don't have to be law profs. Anyone can file a complaint. They've got a web page a person can go to. If you Google Canadian Judicial Council, a person could get that and file a complaint. But the fact that it was filed in the way that it was, I think, is going to give it the attention that it properly deserves, right? The law professors properly point out in the complaint that the issue here is whether the judge engaged in sexist and disrespectful treatment of the complainant, not whether the acquittal was appropriate. It might have been on other grounds, right?
Mm-hmm. But specifically, his conduct is in question.
That's what they're examining. So the task of the counsel is to look at whether he engaged in disrespectful treatment of the complainant, whether he engaged in what's alleged to be a disregard for the law applicable to sexual assaults. That's what they'll be looking at, rather than just, did he not know what he was doing?
If he
just
made a mistake. Is he still a sitting judge while this review is conducted?
Yes, he's apparently still sitting, but I think what they've done is tried to ensure that he's not going to be sitting on cases where issues of this sort might arise.
Maybe that should have happened before he even took on this case, if his background was in litigation.
Well, or, certainly I think perhaps there should have been some more careful inquiries made prior to the decision to elevate him to a higher court.
When will we know the results of this?
Well, one of the interviews with the executive director of the Canadian Judicial Council said that most complaints are dealt with within a few months. So I could expect something in the next 3 or 4 months from them.
Keep us posted.
Yes.
That session was as heavy as the weather, but thank you for walking us through it.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Legally Speaking with Michael Mulligan of Mulligan, Tam, and